The BBC Radio Nottingham interview was by Dennis McCarthy, who is a well-known personality. It was in the afternoon special programme.
Our guest has arrived. Helga Gerhardy has written a book called Helga. It's the true story of how she was a refugee from East Germany and how after the war she reunited her family. But it's a very dramatic book, and there are lots of incidents in it, quite remarkable incidents, because Helga was born in what is, well, what was East Germany, though her parents were Swiss. And during her lifetime she actually met Hitler and inadvertently gave him a bunch of flowers, which wasn't really intended. Anyway, we'll hear that story and the other stories as well from Helga herself, our guest. Helga, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis.
Why did you write the book? Because you do say in it that for many years you didn't talk about your experiences because they were all too painful.
Yes, they were, but I think my family wanted to know about it, and they said it's always good to write, then you can talk about. So I started. Of course, when I came to the more painful part, when I was a refugee, I stopped again, made all sorts of excuses why I had to do housework or something else. But eventually the book was finished, and when I showed it to them, they felt it was such a valuable story to publish, because it showed the other side of the war, what civilians had to suffer, and also the eastern part, what happened in the east, because I think most people in England do, well, or older people like myself who've been through the war, know what it was like probably when the Normandy landing happened, what the Allies did, and gradually the West was conquered and, you know, the armies went into Germany. But what happened in the East, it's hardly ever talked about. What did the Russians do? They did help with the war, because without the Russians I don't think the war would have gone so well, because the German army was divided. But we in the East suffered terribly, because everybody tried to get away from the atrocities of the Russian army.
One of the most painful things about any war, and it's happening today sadly in Rwanda, and it's happening in Bosnia, and it's happening in other countries as well, is to see this stream of refugees carrying their whole belongings with them, with all their family, all their possessions, trundling along to, in a sense, to nowhere, because many of them don't know where they're going. They don't know where they're going to land up. They may get divided from their families, and they may never see their families again. And it saddens me greatly, and the sad thing is we never seem to learn, because we see it today. Tonight it'll be on our television sets, tonight. You actually went through that, didn't you?
Yes, but I think when I left, I always felt we would come back again. You sort of think, all right, the war pushes you away from your homeland, but I never thought that I wouldn't go back to my house again, even if it was half destroyed or something like that. The thought is there, oh yes, one day I will go back. Of course, we couldn't go back, because the Russians are even today still in that part.
Well, your parents were Swiss.
That's right, yes.
That's right. So why were you in Germany anyway? Because Switzerland was always a neutral country.
Well, it was my grandfather who already left Switzerland and founded a dairy in a little town by the border of Lithuania called Tilsit. And he started making cheese, and his cheese actually became very famous. It's called Tilsiter cheese, and even today, you know, you can still buy it in a shop, and people sort of say, I've asked once in Tesco's, they're selling Tilsiter cheese. So I said to the girl at the counter, do you know why it is called Tilsiter cheese? Oh, she said, must have been a man's name. I said, no, that is a town on the River Mabel, you know, dividing Lithuania and East Prussia. Oh, she was quite surprised.
The Germans were occupying your area when you were born.
Yes, that's right.
So you for the first years of your life, you lived and the Germans were there.
That's right,
what
yes.
What was that like?
Well, I think things were all right until Hitler came to power, and then things changed, because before that was great poverty in Germany and unemployment. But although everybody talks very badly about Hitler, he gave the people work, and when you have work, you have money and better living standards. And with that, they adored him. And also all the youth at the age of 10 had to join the Hitler Youth. And of course, I didn't have to do it because I was Swiss. But you could see, or even I could see it as a child, how they were gradually converted to the belief that Germany was going to be the biggest power in the world. Hitler was their adored leader, their Führer, and they would have done anything for this man because of the change that happened financially to people. I didn't feel badly about it, except that all the Jewish people disappeared. I had two Jewish friends, and they were suddenly gone, and I tried to find out what happened to one of them, because she didn't live very far from me. I went there on my bike, and I had a look. They had a draper's shop, and I was shocked to see how this shop was completely smashed up, and the flat where they lived above, the windows were broken. And when I sort of said, oh, what happened, you know, I couldn't make it out, the neighbors just said, you be quiet, it was the SS, go home. And when I told my parents where I'd been, my father was very cross. He said, look, just keep away. I think he tried not to tell us too much because he didn't want us to talk about it, but you do hear things. But we didn't have a lot of Jewish people in Königsberg, the being the capital of East Prussia. There weren't many Jewish people, so I only know about another big store which got suddenly closed, and again everything was smashed up. I mean, there was a big store, something like or British Home Stores or something like that. And of course the SS, they're just taking all the fur coats and everything out, and that was that. And after that was quiet.
But the SS paid visits to your house, didn't they?
Well, that didn't happen until the war started. Once the war started, they felt we were foreigners, and although we were Swiss, belonging to a neutral country, they were still afraid that we might have guns or maybe papers of some kind. And we used to have house searches, and because my father's dairy was in Tilted, which was quite a long way away, he couldn't come home until the weekend because of shortage of petrol. And my mother was very often absolutely petrified when the SS came, because we were four children, and she sort of didn't quite know what they were going to do, and they were rather rough. They used to open all the cupboards, and particularly linen cupboards, and just sort of throw everything on the floor, and with their black boots kick them up in the air. And my mother used to get terribly upset because she knew she had to wash all that again because it was dirty. And in my father's room in the office, he had sort of a little room with a desk and papers in there. They used to just take the drawers out, turn them upside down on the floor, and if it was an officer, he used to just turn round to one of his subordinates and just said, look through these papers. But from time to time, you know, they were most embarrassed, these subordinates. They used to just put the papers back and put it in again. I watched them. My mother was glad when I was there. She always used to try and hold my hand. She wanted to hang on to something, and I was, although we were four children, I was probably the strongest one amongst us, sort of, you know, mentally, really. And she felt if she could hold on to me, that at least there was something. But as soon as they were gone, she used to sort of break down, and she was in a terrible state at times, which upset me as a child.
You met Hitler, and it's quite an interesting story of the meeting between you. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that was really an accident. I must point out that I didn't have an appointment to meet him. Hitler came to Königsberg in 1938, and I was 14 years old. All the other, my other school friends, of course, had to put the Hitler uniform on and stand along the roads to cheer Hitler. I had a piano lesson on that day, and I didn't want to miss that because, well, if I missed it, I had a double one the next week, and I didn't like that. So when I came out for my piano lesson, there was a woman by the side of the road selling some flowers, only little bunches of violets, and I thought, oh, my father's coming home for the weekend, I'll buy him this bunch of flowers, which I did. And I wanted to cross the road because there was no tram going, so I had to walk home. And if I could get across the big road, I could go through the side streets and gradually get home. But it was impossible because of crowds of people. So I pushed through, I got to the front, And I sort of waited, and I thought, well, I don't know, it's all empty, you see, there's nobody there. And then I shot in the road trying to get across to the other side. And at that particular moment, Hitler came round the corner in an open car. He was standing, and two SS men by the side, and one of them jumped off, and he saw me there, because he saw me with the flowers. And he took my hand, and he said, come on then, you can give these flowers to the Führer. So I sort of whispered, Charlie, you know, they're not really for him, they're for my father, but, well, people were shouting so much, and I don't think he could let me go now, because that would have looked very bad. So he pulled me along to the car, and then Hitler bent down, and I was really very frightened. He had cold eyes, and I always remember that, because there was no warmth. There was no warmth there. It was just a fixed smile, and he just sort of stared at me, and my arm came up automatically, and he took the flowers, and then he said, why aren't you in uniform? I thought he would say something else. I had forgotten about that. I wasn't really in uniform. So I said, my father is Swiss, and that's why I don't have to join the Hitler Youth. But I'm not sure whether he even heard what I was saying, because people were shouting so much. And then the SS man just pulled me away, and he said, that's fine, you've given him the flowers, now off you go to the other side of the road. So I ran back, and when I got home and told my parents what had happened, my father was rather upset, because he said, I hope nobody's taken a photograph, because I have avoided to make any fuss. We're visitors, actually, in this country, and we don't want to make any fuss. And in any case, you're not belonging to the Hitler Youth. You shouldn't have given him flowers. Well, I said, I couldn't help it. It was just an accident. But when I got to school the next day, all my school friends, they adored Hitler. Wow. They were all sort of looking at me and sort of saying, now, can't understand that. I mean, you don't even want to say Heil Hitler in school. And then you go and give Hitler the flowers. I said, well, I never did. And I tried to explain what had happened. But they were just jealous. And I would have very gladly given up that post for somebody else to, you know, give the flowers. But
why did you become refugees? It sounded as though the German authorities were satisfied to let you be there and not interfere with you too much. Why did you as a family decide to leave home and go on the road, become refugees?
Because everybody else did. Nobody stayed behind when the Russians came. When the Russians entered East Prussia gradually, we never got the proper news on the wireless, because we were only allowed to listen to the local station. And we were always told that the Germans are retreating, but they will fight back again and get all the German land back. I was a medical student, and when we were bombed, when the university was bombed out, we just had finished up and working at the military hospitals. And one of my duties was to work at the railway station when the trains came in from the front. Well, we suddenly realized, we nurses, that these soldiers hadn't come very far, because they came in cattle trucks and were only laying on straw. And I was only 19 years old, and one of my jobs was to separate the dead from the ones which were still alive. But they didn't all die from their wounds. It was a very severe winter. We had 10, 15, 20 degrees below zero, and a lot of them had just frozen to death, because there was nothing, there was no warmth. But the ones who were alive warned us. They said, do you know or realize how close the Russians are? And some of them had been in villages which had been reconquered, and they told us about the atrocities the Russians performed on the civilian population. So when we realized how close they were, everybody just left, and we had these long refugee tracks. I just joined one, because at that particular moment all my family were scattered. We all seemed to be somewhere else, and it all happened so suddenly, because, like I said, we never had the proper news, and it was only that we heard it from somebody else. And once, of course, you start, well, you keep going. It was winter time and very, very cold, and you just walk. And the front of my book, actually, that's just how it was. I just was one of them, and you just keep going.
What did you take with you?
Well, I had a rucksack, because I thought I better have a rucksack. I had a satchel where I kept sort of the valuables, like I've had quite a bit of money, because I had gradually already started to take money out of the bank. And I had a sleigh with a suitcase, warm clothes, of course, and 2-3 bottles of brandy and some cigarettes, because the thing was, you could bribe people with a drink or with cigarettes, and that was my idea. I would try and see how much food I could get whilst travelling along. But unfortunately, whenever we came to small villages, people had already left. So gradually, of course, the food runs out. I was lucky. I joined with two ex-soldiers. One of them had only one arm, and the other one had a bad leg. And the three of us, we tried to keep together.
You were separated from your family at
this
time?
Yes, because we all started off different. I've had, although we were four children, I had one sister who was actually in the south of Germany. My brother was evacuated with the school, so he was in the middle of East Prussia. My mother had been on a journey to my sister in the south, but when she heard that the Russians had reached so far East Prussia, she tried to get back by train, but she never made it because the trains suddenly stopped and there were no more trains towards the east. And we hadn't heard from my father for quite a time, because having had his dairy in, as I said, near the Lithuanian border, we were afraid that he was already overrun by the Russians. But as it turned out in the end, I did find him. So being all alone, I just started off.
So where did you end up?
I ended up in a town called Greifswald, because I had friends there. And I was nearly dead when I got there, because I had starved so much and frostbite and all the rest of it. And I just finished up in hospital, and they had to burn my clothes. I'd cut my hair because it was so matted. But I found my mother there with these friends which we've had. But I still was afraid that the Russians would reach Greifswald. So we tried to get away from Greifswald, because I felt if we could get to Hamburg, Hamburg was far enough to the west, and we also believed that we trusted the British and the Americans, and we knew that, or hoped that the British would not let Hamburg go to the Russians, because they needed a port. But I'm afraid we never made it to Hamburg. Just before we got there, we had a lift in a lorry. Some Spitfires shot at us, but we jumped off the lorry before it blew up, and finished up at a farm, local farm. And the farmer's wife had a broken arm, but she took us in. And because I knew how to milk cows, which I had learned already, because whilst I was at school, we were always sent on war service to farms during the holidays. So lucky enough, I had learned how to milk cows. The woman kept us, and we stayed there until the end of the war.
In the end, you did find all of your family?
Yes, because when the war was finished, I went to Hamburg, and I found my father there. That was a miracle, but that's a little story in the book. And we finished up at a radio station, which of course now didn't exist anymore, because the war was finished and everything was smashed up. But at least there were some barracks there, and we got some palliasses. We had a well where we could get some water from. Our loo was a little shed in the back with a bucket. And my father still had a car, and he bought a horse, actually, to pull this car to this radio station, because he felt that was all he had left, and if he could maybe exchange that for something else. So we wanted to keep the car. Eventually we changed the horse for a bike. And once I had this bike, although it was very broken, it was my mother's idea that I should cycle all the way to the south of Germany, to Meinburg, near Munich, and look for my sister, who would now be in the under the American occupation forces, and we could trust her that she wouldn't have left, because she wouldn't have been afraid. And I did start off on this journey with my bike, which broke down all the time.
Well, it's a most unusual and dramatic story. Not exciting, but dramatic. And you're here. That's the good thing. Let me tell listeners that Helga Gerhardi was our guest this afternoon. Her book is Helga, just published by Ventura, and it's available at W.H. Smith's.
I'm sorry, it's Verona.
Oh, Verona. And it's available at W.H. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're listening to Afternoon Special.